Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
Star Trek Podcast.
And then they all laughed in that mean Delta Shift way they do.
Ugh, Delta Shift's the worst. How are they even in Starfleet? They should all just join the Maquis.
Well, those jerks figured out how to rig the lottery using an air gap terminal. Oh, they're definitely getting those Deck One rooms.
No, no way. No, we gotta get to that terminal and beat them at their own game.
But isn't that cheating?
So is the whole room lottery. Look, after all the times we've been cheated, we'll just be evening things out.
And if we don't do something, they will.
Ooh, I've always wanted to explore an ethical gray area.
Yes! Let's go gray area the shit out of Delta Shift.
So...
Well,
here we are, everybody.
It's got deity remote.
It's another beautiful Friday evening. We are watching Star Trek Lower Decks Season 3, Episode 4.
Okay, I was actually curious. I wasn't sure if you were in the throes of starting the podcast.
The throes of starting the podcast.
Are you about to throw it?
Please continue.
A wrench into
continue.
It.
Continue. It's, we watched that. I shouldn't say we're watching because that would imply that we're doing some kind of commentary, which we're not doing a commentary.
I did not watch you watch it.
Do you think we should do a commentary sometime, Jesse?
I think that's what we do, isn't it?
No.
Dan is referring to one of those watch-along commentaries.
Oh, yeah.
We should do one of those.
I think we should do that.
A post-hoc.
I think it would be
post-hoc,
a funny
post-hoc discussion, humorous discussion of the television.
We've talked about doing it for the motion picture. Anyway, but we don't know if we're going to do the motion picture that or the other. We don't know. That's for another discussion. But what we're talking about now that we watched is Season 3, Episode 4 of Star Trek, The Lower Decks.
Wait.
The Lower Decks.
It's just Star Trek Lower Decks.
I'm saying The Lower Decks.
Right.
I'm saying it.
Okay, continue.
No, I understand.
My country,
you value you're a a wordular this is a wordular wordular democracy is what you believe in.
What?
Okay, can please continue.
That each word is of the same value as the next word. So the word the is just as value as growth in this instance.
This does not count as continuing.
So, but I'm just getting it clear. So if I were to say room for growth, the reason that the room for growth is not good is because it's like if I said...
the title of the episode.
It's like if I said instead of...
Well, that's not the title.
So you're saying the word the is just as important as... If getting the word the correctly is just as important as getting the word like growth correctly.
All
like, what if I said...
I don't understand what you're talking
what
about
if
because
I, said,
I don't think it has the in the title.
I know. That's why I'm saying it doesn't matter. I'm saying it doesn't matter. I'm saying you can say the room for growth.
I don't understand.
Patrick, you're saying that it's not the room for growth. It's room for growth. So which is a bigger travesty?
That's not exactly what I'm saying.
So,
what I'm saying is that you misspoke and all this nonsense is some sort of retroactive justification.
Yeah, okay. I just want to just food for thought, which is worse if I said the room for growth or room for floaf.
Okay, so shall I pick up the thread here that this is the 100
it totally sounded like you were gonna take over and start the episode.
Well, I was,
and then you just were like, no, I'm gonna throw a fucking wrench into the episode.
No, because like I got called out, so I'm just saying
it's all good.
I'm just presenting an intellectual question, which is a worse thing to say if I was referring to this episode, which would make less sense if I said the room for growth or room for floaf, which would make less sense.
So, first of all, that's a straw man.
What do you think?
That's not a straw man.
It is a straw man
it is
because,
not
you,
a straw
because
man.
You've invented a choice. It's a false choice.
I'm not going to play these rhetorical games with you, Dan. That's not a straw man because I'm making an apt comparison of possibility.
Look.
I'm not saying one is equal to the rest. I'm saying I'm making... You're famous
for your rhetorical chicanery. this is the 150th episode of the podcast.
It's not a straw man.
So Sesquicentennial.
It's not a straw man.
It's the sesquicentennial of the Scott Star Trek podcast. By the way, I'm the first person to mention the fucking name of the podcast.
I said it already, but you...
I don't think you said it.
I said Room for Floaf, and you said...
No, the name of the fucking podcast. I said... It's Scott Star Trek podcast.
I said Room for...
It's the 150th episode.
I said Room for Floaf, and you said the only thing that you could have said that's worse than Room for Floaf is the Room for Growth.
Okay, so the thing is, Dan, that psychologically round numbers like 150 are marketing gold. They draw in all sorts of new listeners. All sorts of new earballs are going to be listening to this, and this is what you can expect. this is not abnormal for this particular podcast. So, all right,
I made my point.
I think we've all made our various points, so we can jump right into
Jesse's laughing. He wants us to make more points.
Our discussion of the episode.
You want us to make more points, don't
room
you,
Jesse?
I'll make a point
for growth. I'm going to make the first point.
Room for growth,
because it's a minor point.
The It's Got Star Trek podcast. There, I said it.
Great. Welcome to the It's Got Star Trek.
Welcome.
Following last week's episode, it's not really a pattern yet, but the titles of the episode I think are great because they make sense for the plot of the episode, but they also sort of lead you in a different direction, right? Because when I saw the title was Room for Growth, I naturally assumed it was going to be something about maybe Boimler has a performance review or whatever, something along those lines. And it totally wasn't. And it was the same thing like last week, Mining the Mind's Minds. Mm-hmm. I kind of thought it might be something where we learn more about what's going on with Rutherford's implants, right? Because, you know, I don't know. It just seemed reasonable. But, you know, that's just a very, very minor, small point. I hesitate to even call it a point, maybe a half observation. But that was my contribution to the beginning of this podcast.
Okay. So you thought that the Room for Growth was, you thought Room for Growth? I'm sorry. I just said the wrong title. It was completely you couldn't understand what I was even referring to. Anyways, Room for Growth. Room for Growth. So you're saying that the title misled you. What did you think? You thought it was about Boimler getting...
It didn't mislead
me. You thought it was about Boimler getting a performance review. But like, what do you think it really what was referring to?
Well,
getting a room.
It's a pun about getting a room, but also their relationships growing.
There were plants that grew.
What?
When they were in that swamp.
Okay.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Right. By the way, like that's it never even occurred to me.
Botanical bay. Or
it never even occurred to me that the hydroponic bay would have a giant swamp underneath. I thought that was pretty cool.
I thought that was cool too.
Yeah, that was.
Although it did seem to throw. Was it who was it that was thrown for a loop on that Mariner? I can't remember. Somebody was. I think
she
it was.
She was
like, "Why do we have this swamp down here?"
Yeah, because she was like, "What kind of weirdo? Goes to space to plant things."
And it was Kayshan.
And there's Kayshan the Temerian, who was planting one of those Temerian trip devices. He has suction cups for thumbs.
Yeah, they all do. That's what
just their thumbs.
Yeah, Temerians have those weird little nooblies on their mm-hmm.
Got
on
some good
thumbs.
Good lines from that.
Yeah. Yeah. This was one of those I get the pun, yeah. Room for growth. It's good.
okay, this great. 6 minutes into the episode.
There's I see your point. This was one of those Warner Brother animation style episodes where there was a lot of weird ass animation going. Tendy tends, even outside of these kinds of intensely like cartoonishly animated, like it's a Disney cartoon mixed with a Warner Brothers cartoon. Outside of episodes like that, Tendy tends to have those expressions for some reason to me. Whenever I look and she's like looking around or making a face and thinking about something, it always looks really cartoonish. So I don't know. There's something about Tendy that always sticks out to me. Yeah, more so than like the other cartoons. It seems.
Yeah.
But not in her personality, but it's just the way they animate her.
But
I don't
in this
know.
Episode, you're suggesting
green.
Across the board, it's more.
Yeah, well, there was.
Literally animated.
Well, of course.
Well, not just literally. Literally and figuratively.
And
well,
it was more
animated.
More so with Tendy. I mean, there was the whole tripping thing. Speaking of the Temerian deaf.
With the nitrous oxide trip.
So what? That was basically the Temerian something plants. Temerian deferent root that they said they have nitrous oxide. They
must
like,
have been like a lot.
They didn't take oxygen. They took nitrous oxide. So I guess their spores had nitrous oxide in them or something.
They needed it for that. Whatever that flower was.
What flower? Oh, that
they needed the nitrous oxide to feed that flower.
Which flower?
I don't remember. Oh, what's
nitrous? Oh, do you think there was Are you saying there was nitrous oxide in the swamp? I thought it was coming from the spores. That it was the spores they were.
It was coming out of the spores.
Yeah. I think it was coming out of the spores.
Okay. Either way, it was entertaining.
Yeah. So
I think in New York now you have to be 21 to buy cans of whipped cream.
The thing I remember about nitrous oxide was that there's like this crazy kind of rainbow effect.
Yeah, they had a rainbow
effect. And they totally had some rainbow thing going. Yeah. So I thought that was cool.
That actually reminded me of a mix between that Simpsons episode, what would you say there? Would you say that Simpsons episode or would you say that the Simpsons episode?
Well, depends. You should be saying the Simpsons episode.
That
the Simpsons episode.
Okay. Fair enough. The one where Homer has to find his soulmate and he goes on that peyote trip. No, he eats the hot peppers from Quetzalcoatlanco.
Like the ghost peppers.
The ghost, yeah. And he trips out.
Or the Beavis and Butthead do America.
Yes, that was kind of...
That's when like it's like Johnny Cash is like a dog that's talking to him or something.
Yeah, Johnny Cash was a dog talking to Simpsons. And that Beavis and Butthead episode, that animation was in the either in the style of something or done by the same artist as who did something else.
I believe it was done
famous.
By the same artist whose name is escaping me.
And he did some other famous stuff that I'm ashamed that I can't pull out off my head what that is.
If I recall the Beavis and Butthead lore correctly, the studio really wanted Mike Judge to put music videos into the movie so it would be like the TV show, and he didn't want to do that, but the compromise was he was like, okay, how about this, I'll do this crazy animated sequence with Red Hot Chili Peppers music and stuff like that.
Yeah, and well, so I wasn't thinking of Beavis and Butthead, but now that you mention it, that makes sense. I was thinking it also had this Adventure Time vibe to it or something.
Yeah.
Like maybe it was the squiggly arms.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It was a little arm squiggly. But it was, you know what? Now that you mention it, it was Adventure Timey.
Yeah, something about their facial expressions looked all like half anime, but not quite or something. And
half anime?
Half. Something about that doesn't feel right.
There was some other sort of anime feel. Anime things had sort of an anime feel at other scenes too.
So there was a other scene, this was Tendi focused, where they were in the bank heist holodeck program. By the way, having like sex in front of hostages, not only is that just, it's more than gross, that's disturbing, that's upsetting.
I think it was intended to be somewhat disturbing.
Well, yeah, but yeah. The way they reacted, they were like, oh gross, I don't want to know that. I'd be more like, oh my god,
they are hollow hostages.
Yeah, but that's the whole fantasy is that's, I mean, I'm not judging. It's just when I think
about
it.
You don't need to be kink shaming.
I just think about scared people watching you have sex. It just seems really horrifying.
It's a cat in a Bajoran.
You do.
It's a cat in a Bajoran.
I like how that statement is simply supposed to be self.
I mean, come on.
Defining.
Yeah.
What else do you expect?
I don't know what to expect.
It does bring up an interesting question that we may have discussed a little bit before when it comes to the holodeck, which is in the holographic world, if you can make almost any fantasy, what are the limits? What's appropriate?
It's always like some 20th century shit. They're always going back to
that. Well, that too, there's a limitation of the imagination of the writers sometimes.
I mean,
although sometimes they have some crazy moon, you know, the deserts of Vegas.
I mean, think of Rule 34 applied to the holodeck, you know?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. And I think it's even beyond Rule 34 though, because it's like, it's the whole scenario.
It's like the prime directive.
This is the most overt example. I think we've always had hints, as some more oblique, some more direct, to the holodeck being used for sex, particularly on Deep Space Nine with the holosuites.
Mm-hmm. The holosuites.
But in this case,
it doesn't happen on the Enterprise.
Oh yeah, it does.
They just take weird mud baths.
In this case, it's sort of like a direct example that we're seeing, and it does make you think. You're like, okay, this is disturbing, but when you get it in your head that this disturbs me, but it's on the holodeck, does that mean it's okay or not? Yeah, okay, it's okay, but like then you start thinking, but are there limits? For example, the classic Barclay using images of coworkers,
right,
which I think most people would be uncomfortable, even if you're very sex positive.
Or that Moriarty business.
Yeah, or trapping a sentient creature in a cube.
Well, I guess it's just the future version of like playing, you know, violent video games, violent and overly sexualized video game, or sexualized video games. It's overly or not is a matter of opinion. But point being is like, you got an older generation that like is terrified of the violence of video games. The current generation is on average, like more embracing of that kind of stuff, I would say. I don't have any numbers to back it up.
Everybody grew up with video games.
Yeah, everyone grew up with video games, and it's like, we know, it's like, I've played violent-ass video games where I'm stabbing people in the face, and I don't want to stab but people see, in the face. The question is,
I want to stab you in the face.
So in the future, will it be the same principle where there'll be a generation of people being like, you're doing weird holodeck sex shit, and the other generation is like, cool down, Gramps, this is normal.
Yeah, but...
This satisfies all my primal urges, so I'm a good person.
There's a nuanced distinction to be made, right? Because what you're referring to is that what are the potential consequences outside of the fantasy, mm-hmm. right? That people have concerns about that. And that most of the evidence, at least that we're aware of, is that video games and things like that are not going to make people become violent, right? So in the holodeck, it may be the same way. There is the separate question, though, of like how disturbing, like what's morally, that's more of a moral question. Well, that's going to be very subjective.
And I was just going to say is that I've actually come across a couple video games that I look at and morally I'm just like, I don't know. There was some really upsetting game about like where you were just going around murdering people, which you could argue is a main focus of a lot of games, but the way that this portrayed it was really, I can't remember the name of the game, but it was like, it was just you're basically playing somebody with like some kind of mental illness and you're just murdering families and stuff. And part of it was that the graphics are so good that even when they're, there's some fucked up Atari porn games that are hilarious, but they're just like the what's happening in these Atari porn games is disturbing, but it doesn't matter.
I know it's all 8-bit and shit.
It's because it's so removed, it's easy to be like, okay, it's not so disturbing, it's just silly. But when they put a lot of effort into making it look real, I guess
there's an entirely separate distinction that I think is also important to note in that with a video game, the analogy is pretty good between video games and holodecks, but where it starts to break down is a video game is somebody has designed that and so you're beholden to whatever the design is. So you might have games you prefer, don't prefer, whatever. With a holodeck, at least certainly more so than a video game, you can customize your fantasy it's coming from you. And so that might be that might be like a more interesting.
That creates more.
I know people make holodeck programs and like pass them around or whatever, but still there's like, you can just ask the computer to do whatever the fuck you want.
Right. And it's so personalized that if you have, like something that's catering to a genre, you can tell some stuff about a person based upon the genre they're into, but you can also know that there's thousands of other people that have those same personality traits in that way because you're all into this broad genre. When you get down to specific genres, you can tell, like, you have more resolution on who that person is because it's personalized just for them as opposed to being in a box shared by a thousand people. What you like. You can't write it off and say, oh, well, I'm not into that part. It's like, no, you're into every part of this, you know?
And so I have absolutely no opinion one way or the other because I haven't thought about it enough, but I think it's something interesting to think about, and it's from such a silly scene where this is a funny scene with Tana and Shax, and especially learning a little bit more about their relationship where it's passionate, but Shax does have, you know, he has feelings.
Yeah.
Shax
has big feelings.
Of course, and that's nothing new, but it's nice to see that in the context of his relationship. Oh, by the way,
I like when Billup smacks him and he's like, let it out. Yeah. Billups gives him that weak little smack again. And Shax is totally feels like he's helping him.
All those ops officers are just nuts, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're all whacked. For real.
Anybody with a yellow shirt on is whacked.
Well, I brought up that part because that was another interesting animation point when she was being pulled down the hatch away from the bank heist when the bullets were shot.
You're talking about Tendi?
She wanted to find out how Tana lost her tail.
Lost her tail.
Yeah, and when she said,
something about the USS Algonquin.
And it was the way the music sort of like went up, sort of a climax at the point where she was getting pulled down, and then it stops and it gets quiet. She goes, oh man, like the whole thing felt like another weird ass cartoon. It was awesome, but I don't want to say it felt out of place because it didn't, but it was just like, whoa, this is weird, weirding me out. But it was really awesome. I thought it was cool. And then the deflector dish room, that scene where they were
anti-grab boy.
The scene where they were pulling him back in, that felt like kind of anime like or something,
yeah,
too.
It did.
Because that was like some action.
When they were panting at the end because they were tired, and the way they were like sitting there like breathing heavily, that looked like anime.
Yeah.
Especially Tendi.
I think one of the best lessons that Lower Decks learned from the animated series, which is an absurd statement for me to make, by the way, because I know these are all professional artists and writers and producers and all that stuff. But one of the benefits of TAS was because of the animated format, they could do these grander, crazier things. And Lower Decks is so great at that. We get to see cities and vistas and all sorts of stuff that even the modern CGI high budget production of Star Trek, they don't have an easy time having somebody like floating around in a deflector dish with the anti-grav and doing pirouettes. Like, did you see Boimler after he was like, you know, was like, oh, I'm anti-grav boy or whatever. He did like a pirouette that looked like if he was doing like a river dance pirouette type thing.
I think it's along the similar principle as the uncanny valley, where it's not that it's creepy.
You know where you can get an uncanny value?
Where can you get an uncanny value? Aldi's?
Well, actually, yeah, Aldi. It's Aldi, but yeah, Aldi, Lidl.
This guy. This fucking guy.
Costco.
Actually.
Aldi's.
Well, I mean, actually.
Aldi.
I just don't want people to think that we don't. I don't. Okay.
Okay.
Admittedly,
fine.
I don't want people. I want people to understand that I know it's
okay.
Aldi.
Okay.
It's that's all.
That's fine.
Okay.
I won't make a stink.
But anyway, you were talking about the uncanny value.
yes. What were you thinking if you weren't thinking Aldi?
I was originally going to say Costco, but I'm glad you brought up Aldi because Aldi is a more clever answer than Costco.
Tee-hee.
In terms of the humor equation, because Costco is sort of, you know, Costco you do get good deals at, but everyone knows Costco.
But Aldi, you wouldn't necessarily think that someone would say Aldi.
Costco's better than Walmart because Walmart is polarizing. Walmart is much more polarizing than Costco, I would argue.
What about Target?
Target's, you know, that's a tricky one. It depends which coast you're on.
More like Lolmart.
And I think probably people outside, we have so many listeners outside of the U.S., and I figure...
How about people that say Target?
Some of them will know about Aldi and Lidl, so that's Lidl. Good. Yeah.
So we were talking about...
the uncanny...
Oh, yeah. So Lolly. when you have a show with like live people, right? And you have a whatever screen or a super dome or some kind of
screen
or whatever kind of CGI method you're implementing.
It's called a screen.
No matter how good it is, there's always the fact that there's real people in there. And for me, when I watch it, I'm always, my brain can't help but sort of compare and contrast. It's like, that's obviously real. That's obviously not real. Or definition of real meaning like this is not CGI. This is CGI. Or this is stop animation. This is, I don't
nerd.
Know. But the point is that with cartoons, you know, it's all generated from one form. And so my brain...
It's all just a bunch of bullshit.
So you can see someone like Boimler doing a pirouette thing in the air, and it looks fine. But if you saw an equivalent, I think, I should use my I statements. If I saw an equivalent in like a Star Trek movie, it would look kind of janky. And it's not Uncanny Valley, because that generally...
what is this Uncanny Valley?
That's sort of like the, it's sort of...
Where is this valley located?
It's like when they, it's why clowns are creepy, because like they look almost human, but not quite. And so whenever people talk about the Uncanny Valley, they're always sort of talking about something that's creepy and weird. But this isn't creepy and weird. I'm applying it to a different principle, which is it just doesn't look as seamless.
I think your point is a valid one. And just, Jesse, the Uncanny Valley is generally associated with the closer an artificial representation of something gets to reality without looking identical to reality, it starts looking weirder and more disturbing and causing psychological
like
problems.
When you see those weird robots that are supposed to look like people on YouTube or whatever,
or you watch some of that CGI animation, like
or even
like the Matrix 2 or something,
or even like Chuck E. Cheese, even that would probably count some way. Or is that a different terror? I don't know.
I think that's a different
I think
this is your brain saying like, why is there a giant robot rat? Why did they make a rat?
Why is this pizza so shitty?
It's a pizza restaurant and it's got a rat as the mascot.
By the way,
why not a mouse or a bunny?
In the spirit,
fat pig.
How about a chinchilla?
In the spirit of the theme of this episode so far, I must correct myself.
I mean, I understand it's because rats like cheese. I get it. I know that. I know that it's not out of the blue. It just seems ridiculous.
But they don't eat pizza.
Well, there's the pizza rat from New York.
Pizza, big fat pig.
You never saw the pizza rat? That was a whole thing a few years back in Manhattan.
It should have been a Ninja Turtle.
I'm trying to correct myself here.
What are you talking about?
I'm trying to correct myself in the spirit of the theme of the episode. It's not what?
You don't need to correct.
Dan is saying he has room for growth, which is true of all.
No,
of us.
I know I had a very specific thing I was about to say.
Yes. Okay, go for it.
Chuck E. Cheese, it's actually Chuck E. Cheese's.
Yes.
Oh.
And Chuck E. Cheese's.
And you all would have said Chuck E. Cheese and not that.
No. But to be just
I know you didn't.
Further pedantic. No.
You didn't.
This is not about errors. It's just clarifying for the audience, our rapidly growing audience.
Carlos E. Queso.
Is that when you referred to Chuck E. Cheese, you were referring to being scared of Chuck E. Cheese himself, as opposed to Chuck E. Cheese's, which is when referencing the establishment.
Well, it depends if
the establishment is Chuck E. Cheese's. It's owned by Chuck E. Cheese,
right? But,
the rat,
right?
And you were scared of the rat. No, you're not scared of the establishment.
Did they use the rat's milk to make the cheese?
What?
Is that why it's called Chuck E. Cheese?
I don't know, man. I don't know.
Because this is not Star Trek.
I don't know, dude.
Oh, my God.
I was going to say, it depends on whether I said at or with. If I said at Chuck E. Cheese, that would have been wrong. If I said with Chuck E.
You
Cheese.
You said you were scared of Chuck E. Cheese.
I don't think I got to play back the tape.
You're scared by play back Chuck
the
tape.
No, I'm defending. That's the thing that makes the most sense. You were like, Chuck E. Cheese is scary.
I think we need to know exactly word by word what was said and what kind of milk that cheese was made from.
Okay. So
Chuck E.
The original Star Trek related point was that, and I fully support your point, Dan.
From under cheese.
That Lower Decks is able to and does so well to take advantage of. Man, my grammatical constructions this evening are bizarre. We did do a little bit of celebrating prior to the 150th.
I think you guys celebrated a little bit. I had a Coke Zero. I had a Coke Zero and a cookie.
I had peanut chews. They were delicious.
But yes, Lower Decks, the animated format, and specifically how they use the animated format makes for vibrant, lively, interesting episodes and a lot of good world building, right? That's what so much of this show is about, is fleshing out not just Starfleet, but you know, we get to go to these crazy alien planets and all that stuff. Not so much in this particular episode, of course.
The alien planet was inside the ship.
Oh yeah, that was the classic making fun of that TNG episode, that masks episode where they're wearing all the masks and getting possessed. So that was a fun, and not only was it a fun callback, I liked that they were like, oh, this is like the third time this
has happened. Stop touching masks.
There's been a few things where like a ship gets like transformed into like a jungle or some kind of like, so, you know, just gets taken over.
There was that terraforming episode in Lower Decks.
Well, there was the Star Trek episode where they all de-evolved and Barkley became a spider or something.
Oh yeah, fuck that shit.
Yeah, that was weird. But so no,
late
and Riker became like a Cro-Magnon Riker.
Right. I like when she came by with the mask. I really like how they sort of like templified, palasticized. You know, the,
is that a word?
Palasticized.
They took it, made it.
Are you talking about Dr. Pulaski?
No, I'm talking about it looked like a palace, so they palasticized it.
Palatialized.
Templified.
That works better. It was not a palace. It was maybe a temple.
Maybe a temple.
And I'm just going by GoldenEye.
That's
on Nintendo
said.
64
oh, yeah.
rules.
That's the only way to go.
Yeah.
No, they used the word temple to Mooksie or Mooksie.
Okay, so they was templified. I liked how they what you guys just basically said.
Where they
took the ship and they like turned it like their hallway beds turned into like those little beds they put dead skeleton people on, you know, as opposed to the live skeleton people.
Like
an altar? Like, you know how they have like in Indiana Jones?
Like, catacomb.
In Indiana Jones, he's going down with the catacombs with the rats, and along the wall, there's all the dents with all the dead bodies in it. It's like that kind of shit. They got me thinking about that hallway. Like, I haven't thought about it as much as I should. I really should have been thinking about this whole hallway setup more. Do you think that's a
room for growth?
Oh, room for growth, like the name of the episode.
Yeah.
Oh.
And they're in a room.
You really should have thought about
when you
it.
Said that last time, that was right over my head.
Hey, Dan, how about this? Can you hold that point for 1 second? We'll take a quick break. And when we return.
It's no fake time.
Dan will,
27 minutes.
Dan will have a fully formed point about the Star Trek Lower Decks episode.
Fully.
Room for growth. You're listening to It's Got Star Trek. We'll be back right after this.
Most definitely.
We're back, folks. We're back.
We're back.
It's so, got Star Trek.
How often do you think do you think that...
That's an acceptable pronunciation.
I'll accept.
Do you say clothes? We're getting off track already.
I say clothes. I say clothes.
You know it's bad when Dan is the one complaining that we're getting off track.
Wait, I resemble that remark.
All right, please, your cogent
no,
point.
No, I resent that remark.
Your cogent not point resemble. Is forthcoming. I heard it coming out
earlier. So how often do you think that hallway is used? Do you think they use it like the upper deckers use it for normal shit? Or do you think they're like...
What do you mean, walking through it?
Just walking through? Or do you think they're mostly like, that's their room?
I think that's the tucked away area. So I think most of the people walking through there are other lower deckers, and they're going back and forth from the sonic showers or the mess hall.
But if you have an ancient mask on and you're...
Yeah, that's what I was saying, right.
Cruising around the ship, transforming it into a... Funky
yeah, because that's
jungle,
a systematic thing she's
going
to do.
She's
systematically going through. I bet the algorithm in that mask was probably pretty, you know, Roomba style. You know, Roomba algorithms,
like a Roomba,
they're not as regular as you'd expect them to be, because it turns out it's more energy efficient and quicker to do it in some like crazy ass AI way.
Yeah, I love patterns. They're so weird and nonsensical sometimes.
I love patterns.
I like how things look the same after a while. There's a Devo song called Patterns that's really good. It's all like, patterns on the zebra, patterns everywhere, patterns sometimes seem so, sometimes seem unfair.
Devo's
do you recognize the patterns in your mind? Anyways, Patterns by Devo.
Devo has good songs.
So she was covering that whole place. Yeah, Devo does have, Mark Mothersbaugh does a lot of stuff now.
Mark Mothersbaugh.
So why was that? So it's just like is this whole hallway where...
I wish the audience could see the degree of your gesticulating.
Should get that on. We should gesticulate on video someday. Keep talking about that.
Why don't you? We can throw anything up on our YouTube channel. We are available on YouTube as well as all.
Well, I'm saying like we should take.
We're on Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts.
But we need to incorporate camera. People like cameras.
People do like cameras.
But it's hard. It's really hard to do. I know. Anyways, the point is.
Yeah.
When you
wish upon.
Okay,
a star.
is this hallway with all the room, the lower deck room? Is this based on something in real life? Is there like real life
like
versions?
The Navy?
The Navy
like on a submarine or on a ship?
Is that how they do it out there?
Submarines.
They just do hallways.
Ships. Well, there's different degrees and levels of stuff.
I always think of it as like a place at the end, something where at the end. So it's not really a hallway. It is a hallway in that it's a hall, but there's not that much space to begin with. So it's not like a place.
But there are hallways on the back end.
On a sailing ship, actually, the junior officers weren't in the hallway. They had their own quarters. They were all in the same room together, but it wasn't a hallway. Yeah. So this is kind of probably something that Star Trek kind of made up just to be.
Yeah, because they have a big aisle. I would imagine Navy ships and stuff have smaller aisles.
Yeah, imagine your enlisted dudes would have just a room in the hallway. Your junior officers would have a proper room.
Right,
you got to share it, but it's a proper room.
Right, and if you had a room in a hallway, I'm saying on a Navy ship or a submarine, the hallway would be narrow, but ones in the Cerritos anyway were like, they're pretty wide. They get a lot of room.
Ship is fucking huge.
Yeah. What is that guy's, why was Mariner getting all pissed off at Fedorov for wearing a short towel? And what does being crammed in there have to do with needing a small towel? Because she was like, first of all, she was like, why not you put on other, why was she all mad at it? Because he had a short towel. Was it because he knocked over her pet Goopy or whatever?
That was Tendy's pet Goopy.
Tendy's Goop.
Goopy the squish. So nobody knows. See, that's why. Why was she Mariner
pissed
off?
Well,
that's
just something funny to say.
I think it was merely a mechanism for explaining that she's getting a little fed up being surrounded by all these people.
Boimler's
and being bothered.
Tuning that violin.
But I mean, but they don't, they're okay with nudity in the future, so it's like...
I don't think it was the nudity. I think it was... Okay, look, if I'm going to read way too much into it and try to extrapolate the meaning, putting myself in Mariner's position, nothing to do with nudity, but perhaps she thought he was having an attitude, trying to show off or something, trying to be like, I'm purposely wearing a short towel to draw attention to my meaty thighs.
But he did have meaty thighs. But then,
he had very meaty thighs.
But then Boimler defended him and he said, like, give him a break. We're all crammed in here. Like, what does that have to do with anything? You know? That doesn't have... Why does that affect the size of your towel?
I think, again, the writers were communicating to us through Boimler that Boimler is recognizing that Mariner is getting a little bit edgy because of the close quarters, literally, that she's being forced to keep.
These are solid explanations.
These are guesses on my part, but I would stand by them.
You should.
I would stand right next to them.
Because I don't feel the urge to argue about it. So that means something. There's another project with the Carlsbad. They bring up the Carlsbad again.
Yeah. Continuity. Yeah. I like this subtle continuity.
Continuity? Episode.
Yes, continuity.
Continuity?
Yeah, subtle continuity.
Continuity.
Continuity also works. I'm a big fan of continuity. Continuity.
Continuity.
Continuity. Work continuity.
Continuity.
You know, speaking of the anti-grav room, so I had a dream, a vivid dream, and I was Bart Simpson, and I was in a giant room. Wow, I was in a giant room that was like...
Don't have a cow, man.
I was in a giant room that was a mile tall and a mile long, and I was anti-gravity, and I was flying, and it was a vivid dream, and I was like going, wee! Can you imagine being in
a
room...
Miles is a good long distance, man.
Can you imagine being in a room a mile tall and a mile long? Can you can you imagine that?
It's like a mountain.
So it was like a mile in diameter? Or was it
square? It was more it was ovular, kind of like the inside of a zeppelin.
Like an oval. But you could still work out the measurement.
A big old zeppelin.
It couldn't be, by the way, Dan, not to be pedantic again.
It was a fucking dream, man. I don't remember.
All I'm saying is, I know dream logic doesn't necessarily make sense, but you described it as being
they were never heard
a mile tall and a mile wide.
Okay,
that's not an oval. That's not an oval.
I don't know.
It's a square or...
Because if I said
circle,
if I said if
or
I,
some other
it's
like
a square,
it could be
baby.
Like a if I, stop sign shape, like an octagon.
It's
not, no,
it's an equally jiggy if, jinx.
No, because
it's not
if,
an elliptical jiggy.
No,
jinx.
If I
it's
said
an equatroid.
If I said if I said
equizoid.
If I
yeah, equizoid.
Hey, if I said
hey.
If I said it's because if I said a half mile tall and a mile long, you would have been like it was exactly a half mile
That's
tall
a
and
rectangle.
A mile long.
I don't think I would have used that tone.
That's
I may
a
have asked for more details.
No, see, my point
in
is
in order to narrow down this dream machine.
My point is if I had specified an amount, you would have been like, was it that? I'm trying to say I don't know how tall and how long it was. I'm saying it was like a mile tall and like a mile long. But if I was like, it was 1 mile long and half a mile tall, 0.6666 miles tall, like you would have been like, oh, it was exactly that. It's like, I don't know if it was exactly that.
And we should all be brave. We three here and our whole audience, we should all be brave enough to admit when we don't know.
You don't always have a ruler.
You just projected some shit onto me.
No, I didn't project nothing on you. Okay.
And you just gaslighted me.
That's not what that means. We gotta be careful about misusing that term because that's fucked up for like the scenarios in which it's.
I'm not. I know exactly what it means.
Look, I'm not trying to steal your aunt's money. Your aunt's inheritance. I think that's what that movie was about. I can't remember.
I know what that term means, and I know when it's happening to me.
All right, so Star Trek.
Billups and Shaxx are super buds, and Stevens worships Ransom. It's kind of a different relationship.
It is, yeah. Because you're right. Because Billups and Shaxx, it's equal.
Ransom is like a mimbo, like that Seinfeld episode.
Yeah. Or a himbo. Isn't that the newer term?
Oh, is it a himbo?
I just know that's the term
I
hear a lot.
They said
They said bro or manzier.
Yeah.
That was a different episode.
They said mimbo. Yeah, himbo.
Language has evolved in the intervening time. The whole business with engineering, with the engineering staff, first of all, I enjoyed the silly, you know, all that mask stuff, which is like, it's just funny when there's a silly reason that these people have to do all this like serious work.
Mm-hmm. And like, it was like the third time she picked up a mask.
And so like, that's just, that's a relatable point. I like when you have a relatable point, we're watching science fiction and it's all up in space and in the future and all this other stuff, but everyone can relate to the higher ups doing something that requires everyone else to do all this extra work that they shouldn't have had to do, but they have to because otherwise people are going to fucking die or whatever. Missions will not continue. So I like that. It was, however, very predictable. I knew exactly what the resolution was. It didn't really impact my enjoyment of the episode. But as soon as they said, okay, you guys need to relax, I knew the joke was going to be that the engineers wouldn't be able to relax because they're like Scotty. It's like when Scotty would go on vacation, right? When it was shore leave time, and Kirk was always yelling at Scotty because he just wanted to sit in his room and read technical manuals.
Right.
Yeah.
A start. It's not even just a generic engineer joke. That's a Star Trek engineer joke that to relax they need to be solving problems.
And I guess, and then the question, of course, that comes to mind is how is that relaxing if it's the same thing as what they were doing before? I don't know. I guess there's a subtle difference somehow. They get to do it at their own pace. I don't know. Like before they, like,
no,
because
they're not relaxing.
Well, the reason they, well, no, the way
they can't help themselves.
No, I know. And what I'm saying, well, they're saying the way, what made their armbands turn green was because they got to like engineer something and that relaxed them. That's a joke. But then what they do in real life,
but
the reason they got stressed out in the first place was because they were engineering too much stuff.
But
so
again,
it's like,
I think the difference is they were fixing stupid shit.
We fixed the door.
It did not and it did not require creativity because they'd already done it three times before. So it's like they're just having to do some boring ass rote shit.
The door shit was
that,
right.
That does not provide them the same satisfaction because, like, remember that they were compelled to fix the door, but that wasn't turning them green, right? It was, it's just like they just are compelled to do
that
it.
That reminded me of when Hank Hill was the shop teacher. There was like some kind of squeaky chair and he pulled out his like Leatherman tool and fixed it. Like, he's going around tightening things. Like,
well,
it's true though. There are people I know people like that who when they go over, they immediately start like looking for shit to fix.
The schematic in the Zen sand was also a good one.
Yeah, well, like an electrical diagram.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was
or and some great jokes. Have you worked out all the kinks? And she's like, yeah, I think it's almost ready for testing.
Yeah.
is that like a good double entendre?
Yeah,
a non-sexual double entendre.
So. Basically, Freeman, she fucked their shit up by like with that Manuki shit. So, so she puts them into overtime. And then she like, because she does that to them, then she's forcing them to relax and she's forcing them to relax in the way that she dictates. So,
yes.
And I guess, and you could say that's pretty selfish, but at the same time, that seems like that would be like a captain-y thing to do, that kind of personality. Just try to like,
I think it's a
it's like, relax now, you know, that kind of deal.
It is a captain-y thing to do. However, it's another example, as we've mentioned on numerous occasions. These are all very capable people. Captain Freeman is a very capable captain. However, they are also all flawed, and that's why they're not on the Enterprise, right? They not that there's no flaws on the Enterprise, but this is a different deal. Captain Freeman has some of these personality traits that can be very obsessive. Because remember, there was that whole episode with the where they had the Boimler effect, and they were all like taking that like slack time where they were overestimating how long something would take. And she found out about it and became obsessed with timing everything down to the minute, and micromanaging everybody.
Right.
So I think in this episode, what we're seeing is the basic truth of the captain having to care about the welfare of their crew and finding a solution for it. However, depending on the captain, they can have different routes to finding that solution. And in this case, as you noted, Dan, she was very dictatorial. She just decided that they needed a vacation. She decided where they were going to go. And she decided the mechanism that was going to help, that she wasn't going to permit their own mechanism, she wasn't going to ask them what would make you relax, which probably would have been, let us hang out and we can hang out in our,
like,
and do puzzles.
I was
and
thinking
stuff.
That I'd want something catered to me. That place, that Dove place, looked a little stressful. I mean, first of all, there was the puppy room, but the puppy room like didn't like fix anyone. The Andorian was like freaking out. And then it wasn't fixing.
They were like, we have a kitten room if you're like a deviant.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I know.
But that,
I like that.
Like, what the hell?
That Andorian was like getting mauled by puppies, which seems so cute, but it's just her face is all like, ah, no. And so that's funny. And
there was another one of those tripod aliens.
There was that dog, there was that puppy with that was like, there was a disabled puppy. Did you see it had like,
yes,
which was cute, but not in a relaxing way. That's in like a stressful, cute kind of way. And then there was that hilarious Klingon that like tried to like, was all like laughing, but he like threw the knife at fucking Taz.
Right. We're afraid to end this one.
Yeah. He threw the knife at Taz and he wasn't even mad. He was like laughing. He was like fantasizing about killing her. But, if Freeman, cause there was one part where, they were getting the pedicures or whatever. And
Petties and manies.
Yeah. And Rutherford, and then, Freeman goes up to Rutherford. She's like, feeling good, Mr. Rutherford? You know what? That alone would make me feel stressed out. If somebody comes up to me with like, so this kind of cocky smile and they're asking me if I feel good because of some shit that they made me do, I'd immediately, even if I was feeling good, I'd immediately be like, Rumpf, no.
You know,
I'm having a bad time.
Was Migley Moo given a pedicure or was that just a Migley Moo type alien? Migley Moo.
I didn't see Migley Moo.
Yeah, no, it wasn't Migley Moo.
I saw Migley Moo given the type dude given a pedicure.
Yeah, I think there was just working there.
So there was the gags where there was sort of like the shit I just mentioned where stuff was happening in the background, you know,
stuff happening.
Like they're having a conversation in the foreground and in the background, stuffing happening in the room. But then there was also the gag of like the person, Taz, the Endosian, who's running the place.
Edosian.
Oh, that's what they're called. I'm sorry.
Which, by the way,
I keep calling them tripod.
Taz
people.
Is running this place, which is a relaxing place. And then there was the other Edosian that ran the farm.
Yeah.
Which is where the Starfleet monstrosities were sent.
Yeah. So this was the kind of thing where the person who runs the
they're like the hospice.
The person who runs the relaxation place is actually like a really stressed out, like cynical person.
Yeah.
And she's like pulling out a vape.
It wasn't even a vape because she lit it.
She lit it, right?
It was like that was a straight up tobacco. Like a filtered tobacco.
And so that's hilarious that she's got all that there. She's surrounded by all this stuff that's supposed to make everyone relaxed. And like, she's like, fuck all this shit.
Yeah, she's like, I know this doesn't work.
I just want a fucking cigarette. But it's true though, because you think like, this is a relaxation place. How come the person running it is such a ball of stress? It's true though. You talk to like most restaurant workers after a long day or even just in general, because I worked in restaurants for a long time and there are some bitter, cynical fucking people. Jaded, just
stuff,
like, yeah, it's like everyone is having fun and you're just being like, not only are you like working your ass off, but you're working your ass off while everyone is like having fun, and you're like, they're having so much fun.
Is that like the chefs at the fancy restaurants and they go home and they just microwave a bunch of store-bought generic brand chicken nuggets?
I don't know.
They're just
all
like,
yeah,
I'm loving this.
I don't.
They'll drink it with a nice glass of wine, but they'll just
they'll definitely have some wine.
They'll just get the 20-piece chicken nuggets and a Big Mac on the way home.
I want to know.
Do they still have the 20-piece?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I want to know how that.
Oh yeah.
I want to know that how that Edosian third arm works, because it kind of has the same problem that Goro from Mortal Kombat has.
Does it have hand toes?
I'm unfamiliar with this problem. Could you describe it in more detail?
Goro is a character in Mortal Kombat.
I'm familiar with that.
Yeah, well, not everyone is. Goro is a character in Mortal Kombat.
What?
Mortal Wombat. Mortal Kombat. Goro is a character in Chortle some fat. He's this giant, and he's got four arms, right? And so you got
four arms.
That's a lot of arms. That might be one too many.
And so he has two sets of shoulders. But here's,
are they big arms or are they little?
They're just fucking
T-Rex arms.
No, no, they're just normal. He's a big monster ogre guy. He's got just four arms. Just leave it at that. It's nothing else to say about that.
Four arms on him.
But the problem is he's still got two pectoralis muscles.
Pectoralis.
So meaning,
sounds like an astrology.
Like this muscle structure is exactly the same, except they just stuck two more arms on him, and that doesn't work.
So it doesn't work.
It doesn't work like that.
No.
I'm sure there's many ways you could handle it, but you
two
have,
of those arms are gimpy.
Yeah, but like in the game, he's not. So obviously, they just basically were like, "We're just gonna stick two," and it's fine. Goro's awesome, and
it's
I'm
not
complaining.
On reality,
I'm not complaining about Goro, but I'm just saying. The Edosian has the similar issue where if you look, it has three.
It's an extraneous limb. You don't need three limbs.
Well, it's got that. It's got two.
Speak for yourself.
The Edosian has hear me out. The Edosian has.
I'm doing pretty good.
The Edosian has two fingers and a thumb, as if it was a left-handed thumb.
They have hand toes.
So they just.
So you think the thumb should be like in the middle or something? Like they should have some like weird.
It should be
middle of the palm.
It should be
thumb.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It should be some kind of ambidextrous thumb. Because
you're about the symmetry.
Well, it only makes sense. Why would
bilateral
you...
symmetry is an understandable
that's
and desirable trait, and that's what Dan is saying. Dan is saying there's no you can have bilateral symmetry with a third arm if the thumb was in the middle of the palm.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying is that you if you're going to have a third arm, are you just going to take the left? Are there do Edosians? Are some of them do some of them have right center hands and some of them have left center hands? Is there a whole war of prejudice against each other against the left handers and the right handers?
Well, why wouldn't the center one just be neutral?
That's what I'm saying it should be, but it's not. If you look at
what
the episode,
it's not?
Look at
he's,
the fucking.
He's
I just explained
they have,
it.
They have left and they there's a thumb that's
there's
on
a,
the side.
There's
of
a thumb on the left hand.
God damn, damn you, sir!
I
on the left. There's a left hand on there, so they've got two left arms.
I'm wow, intrigued by the propositions that you have presented.
So two left arms versus the two right arms,
you're
and they go into some kind of prejudicial war.
I don't have an answer to these questions, but they are intriguing, and I hope that the world building either in the show or the novels do address these issues. However, I can predict one thing, I think, with a certain amount of I think I can predict one thing with a high degree of certainty, which is they probably play some pretty fucking wild instruments.
Oh shit, I thought that was a segue to a break.
Oh yeah, like they play like they got some organ action.
Bet they play some awesome like instruments. They could be part of Max Rebo's band or whatever.
Oh, hell yeah.
His Jizz Whalers.
Max Rebo.
Look, I know that it's canon that George Lucas said that the music in Star Wars is called jizz music.
Jizz Wizard.
I know that. I like that fact. I think that's great. I nevertheless am upset every single time that comes up.
As you should be.
It's just that one is one step perhaps too far.
Yeah, I just can't. Oh, what about when they kept in this episode saying come over and over again?
That also threw me a little bit.
Yeah.
That when they were imagining how they would welcome people into their room.
Right, because by the time Mariner starts saying it, you're just like, well come on, wait a minute.
Is this a joke or not?
Yeah.
Dude.
Because it plays as not a joke too. You can totally play this as not remotely a joke, other than a joke on the fact that they are thinking about their heroes and how they would mimic them, affirming that you're allowed to come into the room.
This episode kept making me think about like how there's all these hidden places in the Enterprise or the Cerritos or whatever, or like any starship.
They took this roundabout route.
And they got into the bowels of the ship. And I was like, I bet you could like hang out there for weeks and build a fort and like nobody would find you. Yeah.
There was that skeleton.
One of them,
you could see the skeleton of the guy.
You could
hack into the replicator or something.
In the swamp. Do you remember in the swamp there was that skeleton stuck in the roots of some vines in the background?
I missed it.
Yeah, and they just walked right past it without making any
explosion. I didn't even notice that. Yeah. Oh, did you notice there were still vines going in after the temple vines? There were still temple vines in various places.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, good stuff.
I didn't notice this dead skeleton, as opposed to the live skeleton. I didn't notice the humanoid skeleton. I was gonna say person skeleton, but that sounds dumb.
Okay, how about this?
No,
let's take another break.
Another one,
and then we can conclude.
Conclusion.
Our 150th episode.
Oh, we haven't celebrated enough.
We can celebrate in the back. It's got Star Trek. All right. We'll be right back.
And we're back.
Hey, everybody. How's it going? How you doing? What's shaking?
150. Oh, my God. But what about the Turbo Lift records? We're going to get caught.
I don't remember that character being in the previous Delta.
She sounded like a mix between Karen from Goodfellas and Janine Melnitz from Ghostbusters.
And they were doing some kind of like finger point thing where they were pointing up and going like, woo, woo.
Delta ship's full of weirdos.
She had short red hair like Janine Melnitz on Ghostbusters,
totally.
The whole Delta ship.
What about the Turbo Lift records? We're going to get caught.
The Delta ship stuff was funny. Continuation, of course, of the previously mentioned rivalry between these two shifts. We haven't heard much about the alpha or the gamma shifts, right? Mm. But I do like seeing this rivalry with these folks. They're only different in the sense that they have different sleeping patterns. But one thing that was cool about this was they did the predictable thing in terms of Star Trek, the predictable Star Trek thing of these people making friends, right? They get forced into a situation, they're in conflict, they get forced into a situation where they're both having to work together to solve the problem or whatever, and blah, 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 blah. That was cool. I didn't mind that because I'm like, yeah, okay, this is predictable. Just like with the engineering thing, you know, solving problems, that's predictable.
But those Delta shift fucks still.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is like over. That's a good Star Trek message. So they got the Star Trek message out.
Yeah.
And then they were able to undermine it by saying like, yeah, but they're still pieces of shit.
They had a moment and then.
Right. In fact, they're worse pieces of shit. We think they're worse pieces of shit now than before because they were willing to basically fake being friends.
Yeah.
You know, that's presumably what we're going to assume because they all.
So they actually are bad. It's not just like, oh, you're from a different, you're from the different place, but we're all pretty much the same. It's like, no, they are pieces of shit.
Because
you exist in a different time zone. But they were pieces of shit too. So they were both sides were pieces of shit.
It was gray area.
For our protagonist,
the shit out of Delta.
It was a gray area.
I guess the Delta ship were bigger assholes because the beta shift or whatever is that? Are they the betas?
Yes,
the beta shift. They were like especially Tendi was all into being friends.
And also they were they were responding to what Delta Shift was doing. Delta Shift was cheating. Tendi overheard them talking about their plan to cheat.
They were picking up what they were putting down.
And so this was a reaction to that. And not that that justifies an action necessarily, but I think it is you view that action differently than if they were the ones to originate the idea of cheating, right? And although in both cases, in this both
they're
key points,
counter cheating.
Well, so first of all, they didn't think of cheating, which is great. They're nice people. They didn't think of cheating. But also at the end of the episode, they didn't think of just sharing the room, which I thought was again another great way to have the Star Trek ending of no, we're going to be friends. Fuck those guys. We're not gonna go through with the cheating. That's the Star Trek message. And then undermined with like, we're stupid. Why did we not
think of it? They missed the whole point of like trying to get the room.
Yeah.
Like they got like bogged down and like they got tired. They were like, I don't know. Yeah. We were tired. We're tired. Well, they were off their shifts. They should have been sleeping.
And Tendi did. I mean, they all did. Everyone on both
Rutherford
sides.
Rutherford was so pissed off. That was like the most annoyed I've ever seen.
It was great.
He was just like, come on, guys. What the fuck?
So
come on.
Both sides were being really shady, but like Tendi somehow turned it innocent and tried to turn it to like some kind of objective science experiment when she was like, oh, I've always wanted to explore an ethical gray area. Yeah. Like she didn't treat it as like she was like wanting to be like, oh, I'm gonna win. Yeah, I'm gonna like, oh, get what I want. I'm gonna take what I want. No one fuck people. She was like approaching it like, what is it like to live in the gray area for a while? Like she's a scientist, and so even she managed to even do that like in a really positive, in a way that's positive and seemed like she was like trying to gain knowledge. You know, so good old Tendi, always with that positive attitude.
For real,
she can make shady behavior seem like awesome.
Yeah, she can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you notice that map of the shortcut? It looked longer than the actual Delta ship when they showed a map of the shortcut.
I think it was longer because Boimler mentioned that it was going to be quite a hike, but that you know for other reasons they get there faster because you know some of the obstacles that the others would have to overcome would take longer. I think that was the implication.
There's so many different obstacles.
I like the line about how Delta Shift, like, why are they in Starfleet? They should just be Maquis. They should all just join the Maquis.
Even though I guess the Maquis is effectively destroyed at this stage.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Maybe
it's just an old phrase.
I think they still joke about the Maquis.
Yeah,
because they're a bunch of bozos.
So anything else, any other major points about this episode?
There was a
bold Boimler.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to say, and I can't say it.
Bold Boimler.
Bold Boimler. There I go.
It will be interesting to see how they resolve this bold Boimler running thread that's been going through this since the season premiere of the third season. It's been fun to see Boimler acting a little bit different. I guess mostly, you know, the least dangerous game is where that term bold Boimler.
Bold Boimler.
Back of the ranch. Anywho, back of the ranch.
Speaking of getting the room at the end, it didn't even occur to me that like at the time that all four of them could have shared one room. And so when they brought it up, when the beta team brought it, it's like, oh, we could have all stayed in. Why didn't we think of that to have like one room to ourselves? You know, I didn't even occur to me either. And it just made me think, I was like, I wonder if they threw that in there just to like preempt internet people, because I bet you there would have been a lot of internet people had they not done that. Because you know how they were like, oh, there's only one room. Well, we'll break up their Delta team and like, so you know, we'll get let them win so the Delta team breaks up. But what ended up happening is they got a better spot. They're like, oh, all
they
four of us.
They weren't even thinking about that.
They weren't even thinking about that. And I wasn't thinking about that. And I was just wondering.
Rutherford was thinking.
We may
about
never
it.
Know this, but I wonder if they threw in that whole bit there just because, like, if they didn't put that in, people on the internet would have been like, well, why didn't they just get one room and share it between the four of them? It's still better than a hallway.
I suspect that is not the reason they added this.
You think they just did it for funds?
No, I think they did it because it makes sense thematically.
It does.
It gives some.
It's like, oh, that Delta Shift.
Yeah, it's because Delta Shift needs to remain as an antagonist, right? As a group antagonist, and the antagonist has to have some level of skill and competency in order to be a realistic antagonist for our protagonists, our flawed protagonists who do make mistakes from time to time. I think another thing worth mentioning that I think we've been seeing more of this season is shaking up the regular partnerships, right? They started doing that a little bit in the second season where they're, you know, because it used to be, it was like a real focus on Tendi and Rutherford and Boimler and Mariner. And this season, they've been shifting all that around a lot. And in this episode, we have the three of them without Rutherford. And so we're seeing right. how the dynamics are different each time. If I had to guess, I think one of the reasons they're doing this, in addition to opening up new avenues of storytelling, which is sort of the basic reason to do that, I wouldn't be surprised if they're also subtly conveying the importance of the group of four in terms of like, that's when they're at their best. That's when they like they're on firing on all cylinders when all four of them are together. So it could be that right. by the end of the season, you really need to have all four of them working in concert to solve even, whatever the big problem might be.
Okay, because even Rutherford seemed like he would have known the answer. He would have been like, why don't we just all take that room? Like, he's like, why didn't you guys do that?
So fucking pissed off. yeah. And I really liked seeing it sincerely and legitimately pissed off Rutherford.
Yeah.
Especially after all that relaxation that he was forced to endure.
So what do you guys think in this part, when Billups goes, when the captain freaks out and like just loses her mind, and then like the Taz is like super pissed off, just hilarious. But when Billups goes, captain needs to relax, and the Taz is like, she needs to relax, she's gonna freak out. And then Billups goes, if that's what the captain needs, then we need to figure out a way to stop engineering and start relaxing. And then Rutherford goes, sir, I think I know what we shouldn't do. And then what shouldn't they do? I don't understand. I don't know if you remember this part, but that was previously, that was directly before they created the relaxation machine.
Yeah.
So I didn't know what he meant by, I know what we shouldn't do.
I had a little trouble with that too. Maybe I think it was a funny verbal construction that no doubt one of our listeners will write in and let us know that we've missed an interpretation there.
Yeah, maybe it just meant like we shouldn't like sit around and get massages. Maybe that's what he meant, but I don't know. It wasn't clear. I didn't really get
sense
what they were,
to me.
But I didn't really get what they were going with.
No, that makes sense to me. It's plausible that that's what that meant. So I don't know.
Even though like it was like all perverted and stuff, I was so like, it warmed my heart to see Ransom all like smiling and pleased at the end with his churros.
Oh yes,
he got a churro thing, because it's like that's another sort of, we're seeing all these perversions in this episode, and like
we are seeing a lot of perversions in this episode, aren't we?
Yes, we are. And the way he was like all comforted and smiled, and they played the nice music at the end, I was like, oh yeah, you know, he's not hurting anybody. It's good for him.
It's just churros. Yeah, it's 35.
Doing what is he doing with those churros?
And he ordered them hot.
Yeah. It's all creepy. He's all like doing that looking around thing.
Well, and part of the reason that works so well is it goes into that sort of standard Lower Decks closing music where it's got that Star Trek-y, you know, rising scale kind of doo-doo-doo.
I don't know if I've ever actually had a churro.
Oh man, proper.
They're good.
Oh, churros are good, especially when they're hot and fresh.
Yeah, it looks like it's. Yeah.
Don't get the old ones. Yeah. Get a fresh one. Wait for a freshly fried one.
You know what? I'm like in the waffle boat, because waffles are good for.
Oh, I'm in the waffle boat.
They're good for breakfast, dinner, and dessert. How many things can say that?
Yeah, I'm a waffle
lunch,
guy.
And lunchtime too.
It's I got nothing against pancakes. Pancakes are plenty good, but I'd always rather
waffles. Got
waffles my preference.
So you put
you can hold all that syrup and
you
butter.
Can put savory, you put syrup. You can put sweet.
Yeah, for
you,
breakfast is syrup.
Syrup and butter.
For lunch, it's covered in sausage and gravy.
Syrup or syrup.
Chicken and you can get fried
and
chicken and,
for
you know,
dessert,
chicken and
it's
waffles.
Ice cream and whipped cream.
Yeah,
plop
some ice cream on there.
Chicken,
yeah.
You can put chicken.
Chicken for dinner, yeah, chicken for dinner. So yeah, savory. So you just got
or
your different modes.
Gravy,
but it just works.
Sausage gravy,
or you can make like a beef broth and just pour it. Just pour it right on.
You can put some beef broth on.
You've never had beef broth waffles?
Just dip it.
Beef broth waffles.
I
want beef broth waffles. Yeah.
Melt some Swiss cheese on there and dip it in some
I don't know
beef broth.
You think it would be good in fondue?
Au jus.
You could have a French onion waffle.
Oh, it'd be great in fondue.
French onion soup.
Did you say you could have an au jus with a waffle? Is that what you said?
Waffle au jus.
And then you could dip it into some melted...
Oh, waffle au jus?
That's what I said.
You could have it... And if you had a fondue, you could have it for the
fondue.
Dinner... You could have it for the dinner fondue.
Waffle fondue? You could dip it in the cheese?
You could have the dinner fondue and then the dessert fondue, where it's cheese for dinner and then chocolate for dessert, but both waffle all the way. All the way.
Yes. Okay.
I want my fondue waffle all the way.
Give me a time and a place.
Oh, yeah.
How about in a few minutes when we finish this podcast?
Okay.
We'll continue celebrating our sesquicentennial.
With waffle fondue all the way. Or is it fondue waffle all the way?
I don't know. I don't even know how we got here, honestly.
Yeah. Have we seen Tendy's pet Goopy before?
No, I don't
Zoopy,
know.
Zoopy,
that was,
the Goopy the Squish?
New and weird.
And I initially I thought it might be involved more in the plot, and it wasn't. It was just this sort of like side thing that it got Tendy to go into the Jeffries tube.
That's about it.
But
they could have done anything to get her in there. Like there was, they just chose that though. So I want to see more. Goopy's cute.
Yeah, Goopy is cute.
Goopy
the Squish.
I'm guessing Goopy is sinister.
I'm naming it now. Goopy the Squish. Goopy the Squish is what I want to see more of.
All right, you write Mike McMahon.
Say, I want to see more Goopy the Squish.
Direct message him on Twitter.
What is it? Hashtag Goopy the Squish.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to leave that to you to start. I'll happily retweet anything you
hashtag
post.
Goopy the Squish.
Yes.
Because I want to see more Goopy the Squish. Goopy. Right. Tendy's pet Goopy.
You're looking at me when you're saying this, and I'm not in charge of this decision. You've
Goopy, Jesse, Goopy the Squish.
Mike yes. McMahon.
Goop, now I'm looking at Jesse.
On the internet. Jesse also can't help you with this.
I'm looking back at you.
We can merely support you in your endeavor.
What do you want from
Jesse's
me?
Not even on Twitter, so he can't even help. He can't even like retweet or nothing.
It's pronounced Twitire.
Okay. Again, any odds and ends, final points?
I think as usual, I express my odds and ends throughout.
I enjoyed this episode.
I've got odd bits about.
I like the title. I like the plot line.
They've all been pretty solid episodes.
Character growth. I'm continue to be impressed with the ability to have consistent character growth and consistent world building and subtle serial elements like the Bold Boimler and stuff while retaining the very strong episodic format, right? You can hop into this episode anytime you want. And I do really like that.
You mean the series?
No. This episode, yeah. I'm saying this episode, you can hop around this series, but I'm saying this episode, all Lower Decks episodes, you don't need to watch them in order. You might get some benefits.
I thought you meant just like you could start at 10 minutes into the episode.
No, I don't. I do not. No. I'm not that crazy. In fact, as you know, I have the opposite problem.
Yeah, you would that doesn't sound like something you'd be into.
No, I'm the type of person where if I show up a minute late to the movie, I'm leaving. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm not watching this movie a minute into it. That's crazy.
Maybe you can get them to rewind.
I came into when I saw Memento in the theaters, I'm not going to give any spoilers, but I guess this could be considered
you saw
as
Memento
a spoiler.
In the
was I with you because when I went to see Memento, I missed like the first 5 minutes.
I missed the first 15. I missed the first. It felt like the first 10 or 15 minutes, yeah. but
it does make the movie slightly more.
It's
confusing.
Weird, yes, because the whole beginning.
I watched it on TV and I missed the first.
If you don't watch the beginning and you watch it to the end, it's more of like this mystery.
Mike
it's like,
had to explain it to me.
It's like so. I came after like the opening shit tells you what's happening, and it's like a mystery. I'm like figuring like, oh no, is this person this? You know, and then it's like I was like, oh, it is. And then like later, I rewatched it from the beginning.
Teddy.
I was like, and I'm like watching it later, and it's like, oh, they say that in the first 5 minutes of the movie, and I didn't fucking
don't
know.
Trust Teddy.
Beef broth waffles.
Beep bop bop.
Well,
beep bop bop. Right. I want the beep bop bop.
I said my piece.
I think our time is at an end.
All right. So
we've done our best.
Briefly, before we close down the show,
Girls at Their Best.
That's a band. It's a really good punk rock band.
It's a very good band.
What?
Girls at Their Best.
What?
Oh no, Girls at Our Best.
Yes.
Girls at Our Best.
What?
It's hard to get right.
Look it up.
What?
Look it up on the old
YouTube
or Spotify.
It's Girls at
Our Best. Because
Girls at Their Best is a totally different band. They're like some other kind of crazy shit.
That's a band that's all sing songs about girls going to that store. Remember that store, Best? It was like a department store.
It was like Monkey Ward's.
It was down at Fairfax.
It was like the Monkey Ward's, right?
Yeah. All right.
Montgomery all right. Ward's, that's
yeah.
what...
Yes.
Before we close things
it
down...
It was like Monkey Ward's.
Yeah.
Before we close things... Before we close things down, briefly, yes, it is our sesquicentennial.
We're the best.
It's 150th episode.
The sesqu.
We don't know. We didn't know how to celebrate this. So we'll merely mark the occasion here.
It's got Star Trek at their best.
We did look up. We were like, okay, how about this? What's the 150th piece of Star Trek that was produced?
Yeah.
And that turns out to be Star Trek V. The Final Frontier.
Bizarre.
Which is cool.
How bizarre.
And
how bizarre. How bizarre. I like that song. It's like, ow.
Who does that song?
Ow.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a different song. That song is tight, though.
I like the song. It's also like, word up. What's the word?
What the fuck are you guys talking about? I'm trying to end this whole podcast.
I'm sorry.
Star Trek V. I do want us to.
I don't know who does any of them.
We'll do a podcast episode on that sometime soon. I think we're going to do Star Trek the Motion Picture coming up soon. So keep your ears open for that.
Keep your ears peeled.
But Star Trek V's got to come along sometime.
Shove pencils in them.
Star Trek V, for those who haven't seen it, has a bad reputation. Much of that bad reputation is deserved from the context of a movie viewer. However, there's so much good stuff in Star Trek V, including important character building stuff for Spock, McCoy, Kirk.
Right.
There's some interesting stuff.
Nice little scenes.
It's got David Warner in it. It's got Uhura doing the fan dance. There's really
it's
good
got
stuff.
Like Sabok or what's
Sybok.
Sybok.
It's got marshmallows.
Speaking of Mortal Kombat, there's a Mortal Kombat character called Cybot, Noob Cybot. And that's Boone and Tobias backwards. We're the makers of the game. The main two makers.
All right. Dan is eventually going to start a video game podcast in which he can relay all this.
Ed Boone and something Tobias.
Very cool information.
Boone. Ed Boone and something.
So we're not going to discuss Star Trek V now, other than to say you should see it. It's the 150th thing ever made in Star Trek, at least according to like Memory Alpha. Whoa. So I have no doubt there's going to be some debate and be like, actually, it was
John Tobias.
So but we're just going to go by the Memory Alpha numbering system. So that concludes our 150th episode.
It's a silly movie.
And this is a silly podcast.
Nope, it's too silly.
We hope you.
No, I don't think it was too silly.
We hope you got
just enough
some degree of enjoyment out of it. We are loving Lower Decks as has been the case throughout.
And
first
if you don't, I don't care what you think.
If
I don't give a shit what anyone thinks,
if for
that's
some
why
reason,
I'm doing this, because I don't care what anyone thinks about me.
If for some reason
you don't say
after listening to all of this. You are compelled to want to listen to more of our coverage of Lower Decks. We have going back in the catalog. We covered all of season one and all of season two.
Yeah.
So you can go check those out. The easiest way to do that, other than scrolling back through your podcast player feed, is if you go to www.itsgotstartrek.com. We have enabled an option that lets you sort by series or podcast topics. So if you want to just listen to Lower Decks or the animated series,
that's one of the ones we've done the most.
Lower Decks, yeah. And the animated series, those episodes that podcast episodes are always good.
It's a veritable podcastacopia.
We've done at least 10 episodes on every series other than Prodigy. We've done one episode on Prodigy. So we'll probably do some more Prodigy stuff down the line too. So
yeah, but
anyway,
there's all those ones we've done more though.
You can do all that at the website. It's got StarTrek.com. You can find us on Twitter. At It's Got Star Trek.
It's
on Instagram.
The Prodigy.
At It's Got Star Trek. It is the Prodigy. YouTube. We're on YouTube. If you are listening
you
to
just
us
shut me down.
On YouTube or something and you're like, oh, I want to listen to these guys on a proper podcast player. Well, we are on Apple Podcasts.
Apple Podcasts.
And
I mean, we're on everything that has podcasts.
Yeah, but sometimes you say the thing and people are like,
Spotify.
Oh, yeah, I've got that.
I think it's on Spotify.
Spotify and Amazon and on Google Podcasts. And all that, yeah. Basically, you do a search for It's Got Star Trek.
You couldn't throw a rock without hearing our podcast.
You could not.
I don't agree with that analogy.
If a rock crashed into the forest, and no one could hear it.
Okay. Did you actually listen to our podcast?
Did you actually listen to the podcast?
Okay. I think we've done all the bits and pieces that we're obligated to do.
Nooks and crannies.
Week.
Odds and ends.
So
is it my bits or my pieces?
We look forward
to... What's that from? Is that from something about Mary or something?
Talking to you next week.
Oh, no, that's Beans and the Franks.
About the next episode of Lower Decks, whatever the episode ends up being named. And so until that time.
Until. I drink milk. I drink milk.
Until that time.
You drink water.
No one drinks water.
Water.
We do convey our best wishes for the week ahead for all of our friends.
It's just great when everyone's talking at the same time. it's really good radio and podcasting.
It's really what people are into.
They're really into everyone just talking at the same time.
It's the new style. Okay,
it's new podcast.
We will talk to you.
We should just have a podcast where we all get in separate rooms that we can't hear each other and we just start talking.
I'm down for that. Okay, actually, I will say
that's bold, baby.
To the audience,
or we only hear one word every 10 seconds of what the other people are saying.
Now you're just overcomplicating
things. Like, Dan, did you say?
I have suggested an idea to Dan and Jesse. That there has not been a tremendous amount of support for it yet, but I still think it's a good idea, which is that we should one day we should do a podcast in which we do a commentary on an old episode of our podcast. So maybe like our first episode where we listen to the podcast and simultaneously,
would people want to listen to that?
That's less important to me as an artist. Just the idea to me sounds so hilarious. Cacophony I'm using.
The only thing is it feels a little self-congratulatory to me.
No, it could be very, very, we would be critical of ourselves, no doubt.
I always have a thing when I'm listening to the podcast where like I don't always remember everything that I say, so as I listen it's like I'm back into it
and you think the thing happens to me too.
Like I could start like just saying what I think and then like it'll be echoed by what I say.
That's wild universe.
I don't know that it would be entertaining to the audience. It would be entertaining to me.
Well, it feels a little, that's what I'm saying. It feels a little masturbatory, doesn't it?
No. I think it is a certain level of masturbatory, but a performative masturbation.
Yeah.
And
just call it a performance. There you go.
If you call anything performative, it becomes immediately more acceptable.
I mean, performance art is kind of like that.
It's avant-garde, Dan.
Avant-garde podcasting.
It's not masturbatory.
Is it postmodern or is it avant-garde?
We're not going to make money doing that.
We don't have to be that labely, but.
We'll make more money with our beef broth waffle idea.
Beef bottle.
Still think it's something worth trying.
Get some onions.
Anyway, you can let us know. feedback@itsgotstartrek.com or let us know on Twitter @itsgotstartrek if you think any of this is a worthwhile endeavor. Okay, we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Computer, 35 churros in an unmarked paper bag. Hot.